Hello, everybody. Welcome to What's for Dinner. I'm Flip Schultz. This is my podcast. First of all, I want to apologize unendingly for the lack of podcasting. I'll explain why in a little bit. And B, the quality of the last podcast was absolute shit. I mean, not the content, but the audio quality. I don't even know why I put it up. It was like turning in a D paper when you knew it was a D, and you just didn't want to work on it to make it an A. It was lazy. I apologize. So if you're listening to this, obviously, you've ignored the shit quality of that last podcast. Again, not content, audio-wise, and are now listening to this. So thank you for that. And also a very special thank you to Brandon Wolf, who sent me my very first fan email about the podcast.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So that's the voice of the guest, whom I will introduce momentarily. So, Brandon, if you're listening at work, as you say you do, thank you very much for the very kind first of hopefully many emails of people who enjoy what's going on here on What's for Dinner. So today you heard a little snippet of my guest. He is really one of my oldest friends in the L.A. comedy scene and one of the funniest guys in the L.A. comedy scene. I feel like I'm bringing you up on stage. I was about to list your credits.
I was ready. I was ready to go.
He, you know him from last season of America's Got Talent, one of the, I think one of the best comics they've ever had on there. And I just, I'll talk about this with him in a minute. But also MTV's Disaster Date.
Oh, yeah, I was on that, wasn't I?
You were on that, yeah. What else have you done? Those are the two I can think of offhand.
I have extensive credits.
Did you do Gotham?
No, but I did Premium Blend.
And actually, he and I met on Last Comic Standing.
Season four.
Yeah. Actually, I will introduce him officially, and then we'll reminisce for a second. Yeah. My very good friend and very special guest, Mr. J. Chris Newberg, is
Hello.
Here.
Yes.
Everybody.
Yes. Yay.
That's our audience of one, a.k.a. my wife.
Yes.
Yeah, Chris and I, we met. First of all, do you prefer J. Chris or Chris?
Chris is great. See what I did there?
We did a little switcher. We met season four of Last Comic Standing. That was the first time that I remember. Do you remember actually the exact second that we kind of like met?
We talked about 80s music like right away.
We did, but even before we got to filming.
Okay.
It was at a Comedy Juice show at Melrose.
Okay.
And I was going in because I found out I was going to the top 40. I wanted to run like my little 3-minute set. And you were there, I guess, happened to be doing a show that night too. And you heard my name and you came over. You go, you're Flip? I go, yeah, he goes, hey, I'm J. Chris. And I recognize your name from the people who got picked, too. And I said, oh, hey, nice to meet you. He goes, yeah, we're doing Last Comic, man. I go, oh, yeah, it's going to be fun.
Is it weird that I think your impression of my voice is cooler than my actual voice?
I would take it as a compliment, actually.
Yeah, I was like, wow, I wish I sounded like that.
See? You're right. I sound much cooler as you. You should try to learn my impression of you.
Well, yours is much throatier. You're
guttural?
Your impression of me, yeah, but like your voice in general is throat driven. You have like sort of a deeper.
Well, that's how we do Skippy.
Right.
Yeah, and yours is higher up. Is that what you're saying?
Mine is sort of, I don't know. Mine, I guess mine's just more like actual magic.
Yours, it does, you know, now I'm listening to like really listening to it. It's very a fluid voice. Well, you're a musician, so right. You have to be more aware of where what your voice is doing and everything.
Yeah, I'm really good at like mirroring voices, but I can't do impressions.
Are you better at like mirroring singers?
Mm-hmm. That's easy.
Like who's the best one you can impersonate?
I can't really impersonate anybody, but if I hear them like and you need me to match them perfectly,
mm-hmm.
I can do that because I did that the other day for a commercial. I had to match the Spandau Ballet guy.
And for like, True?
Well, it was funny. There was a commercial. Yeah, for True. There was a commercial for Chevy, and
can I hear it?
I think I did, again, if it were right on, it'd be like, I know this much is true, you know, like,
yeah,
but I could say
when you're belting it,
it was totally perfect if it were like in the background. But anyways, not that I'm one of those people who's like, I'm a really good singer, but, I need there to be no one around. I'm not that person. I'm just saying,
you know, what's funny about that song. That's the song I lost my virginity to.
Really? I think North America lost their virginity. And I, you know what I was thinking about the other day? I was thinking about, like, you'd appreciate this as an 80s music guy.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of, and I didn't at the time, I have a really big problem with the lyrical content of Fast Car by Tracy Chapman. Because you think
a fast car.
Yeah.
Is it fast enough that we can tell that? Yeah.
Okay. Here's my problem with it.
Please.
Okay. For starters, she talks about how poor she is. How'd her boyfriend get a fast car then? Did he rob it? Did he steal the car? Secondly, he doesn't have a job. How does he pay for the gas? Third, she talks about how her father's got a drinking problem, but then she talks about how awesome it is going in the fast car and feeling drunk. So is she subliminally, like, enabling her father? And what if he just sold his car? Then there aren't any problems. These are the problems I have with fast car. And it's like, we got to make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way. You're going to die because you're taking care of your father? Or, like, there's a suicide pact?
I've never really thought about that.
I'm not upset about it. I'm gonna be okay.
Do you want to call her?
I think I should, but I don't know if she's dead or driving.
She's still driving in that fast car. Yeah,
she's never stopped. Ever since that song took off, it's been a fast road.
I don't know what it is about black soul, especially black female soul singers. A lot of them are really like one hit. What did Tracy Chapman ever do after that? And what did Macy Gray ever do after her big thing? And maybe Tracy Chapman drove to Macy Gray's house.
Okay.
And started giving her, I don't know where I'm going with this.
I didn't know, I didn't have a destination either, but I was just,
I was just
know.
In a fast car driving somewhere. Was it fast enough that we can leave this subject? I remember when I was a kid, before I could really fully understand the deeper meaning of songs, I would just listen to the lyrics. And I remember, again, especially a kid when you don't know certain words, you hear a song and think they say something else.
Yeah.
Like mistaken lyrics. The one for years, you know, the song, Always Something There to Remind Me?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was Always Something Hairy to Remind Me.
Really?
Like, always something hairy to remind me. Ba-ba-da-ba. And so as a kid, I just picture, like, this guy holding, like a piece of hair, or, you know, like a fur ball or something. I went, oh, I miss her.
Right. As that's the connection, like, maybe he scalped her. Yeah. Or he was watching Harry and the Hendersons, and he was trying to connect with Harry.
Great reference.
You know, saying, always something hairy.
Hairy to remind me.
Right.
Did you ever have any of those, do you remember listening to any of those mistaken lyrics?
Yeah, Pink Floyd, I was, instead of All in All or Justa, I thought it was Old and Old Augusta. Old and Old Augusta. What? Pink Floyd knows about Georgia?
Old and Old Augusta.
What? It worked.
It does work. There are plenty of walls in Georgia.
Yeah, and so. Yeah, there's a bunch. I think I used to think that No Control by Eddie Money was Milk the Troll. And it works.
I don't know if I know that one.
It's like I got no control. No control. It was like
Milk the Troll.
It was his follow-up single or the pre-single to Take Me Home Tonight. But it totally works. If you hear No Control by Eddie Money and you've heard it, because Eddie Money's like one of those people where it's like Denny's. You're like, okay, it's familiar. I never thought about it, but it's there.
Yeah.
I'm aware of it. And you can milk the troll to every time he says no control. No one questions you?
No. No. Why would anybody question why you'd milk a troll? Listen, if there's a troll, it's to be milked.
It for sure has teats.
It does. Troll teats.
Troll teats.
Which are also called treats.
Right.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Because trolls milk... tastes like butterscotch.
It does.
Butterscotch ripple.
Everyone knows that.
Well, now they do.
Everybody who works at Denny's knows that.
Because most of the trolls work at Denny's.
It's callback taxi, everybody.
Callback taxi.
Callback taxi. Zhing.
Cha-cha-chung. But, by the way, this is how this show goes. It's kind of stream of conscious silliness, whatever. Sometimes it's serious, sometimes it's silly. Just so you... Because Chris called me up. He's like, do you need to prepare anything? Should I bring my guitar? I'm like,
Nope.
This is just... No, yeah, and Allison has a guitar if you ever want to.
No, I'm good. I like this.
Good. Because I noticed, too, your thing, I hate saying thing, but your thing was these really brilliant songs that you'd have just a great, I guess, for lack of a better term, just a great laziness about your performance that's so charming that you just, it's like this, you don't that's the other thing I was going to say too. On America's Got Talent, I thought one of the coolest, ballsiest thing was Chris has a great song called That's Probably a Bad Idea. And you did that performance and you brought a choir of children out with you with all painted on goatees.
Yes.
And I just thought that was so fucking cool because it's you could tell that wasn't something the producers wanted. That was something you wanted to do. And somebody might have told you, that's probably a bad idea. And you
were
from
the beginning, they were like, dude, kids, beards, don't. And I'm like, nope, funny.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, I so fucking admire you for that.
Thank you. Now, that whole America's Got Talent experience was different from Last Comic on several levels. One, because there was way more people that watched it and way more people are... You're accessible to way more people now so than before. You know, like back when we did Last Comic 4, there wasn't Twitter, Facebook wasn't as thick, it wasn't like there wasn't that much obsession with reality television. It was like maybe American Idol, maybe something else. But now it's like 2 out of 3 shows on every network, their strongest shows are reality television. And I remember when I got off, I did 81 seconds. I got home, and you know how everything is connected to your email, whether it's Twitter, or Facebook, or
Google, or whatever.
7,300 emails.
Holy shit.
And I was like, what the fuck? And I always joke and say, you want to know how many emails that is? Just imagine like if you ever get like 2 text messages, and you're like, oh, I don't have time for this. 7,300 emails of craziness.
Those weren't all like personal emails to you. Those were just notifications that you got.
Like, it's like you're there. You're just right out there. It's as simple as like seeing, you know, Chris Newberg. So they're like, oh, Google. Oh, here's his Facebook. Oh, here's his email. Oh, here's whatever. And it's like just because 15 million people watch, that doesn't mean 15 million cool people watch. It means that like a lot of really fucking idiot people who have access to computers, who are really mean and have nothing better to do. Like, the majority of people are happy. You're very funny. I really liked it. You know, and then like 20 or 30 dudes decide to send me pictures of their dick. You know, why wouldn't they? Why not?
I get those anyway. I'm not even on TV.
And then it's just like, it was overwhelming. It's like,
I can't imagine.
And I mean, I didn't even kind of win, and it was overwhelming for a very short period of time.
Well, you were the only comic left, right?
No, Melissa Villaseñor, but she's more of an impressionist, I guess.
Oh, she's one of those, like the Sarah Silverman.
Yeah, she's a tremendous impressionist.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if she refers to herself as a comedian or an impressionist, but she performs at comedy clubs. She has a tremendous vocal ability, and she can mimic anybody. She stayed on longer than I did.
Do you think that? Do you think you still what you did on the show was and obviously it's been enough to up your kind of exposure?
Yeah, I mean,
it
definitely
credibility in the business.
It helped. I mean, I know because how well I did, they're going to use more comics this year. They're using a lot more comics and more focusing on it. But it has that sort of like it has that sort of feel to it where it's like I feel like the Ramones. To whereas, like, the people who are going to benefit now are Green Day, where everyone's like, oh, the Ramones were my influence. But look at that huge house Green Day has.
Right. So you're the Ramones of America's Got Talent comedy.
I am. I'm the Ramones, yes. I'm Bruce Springsteen on his first record.
You're Into the Darkness, is what it was? Edge of Darkness?
Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Whatever that one was.
I think so.
I knew Darkness. I know there was an edge and dark involved.
Yeah. No, I just, I don't have time for bitterness because you can't stop it.
No, I mean, you have no reason to be bitter.
No, but it was one of those things where it's like I went on a rated G television show as a comic who does kind of dark sort of weird.
Yeah, that's the other thing. That did you feel like, not just with the kid thing, but like with any of your material that they were, you know, keeping you a little, your hands tied?
No, but it's amazing. Like, and I didn't pick up on it before, but there's so many tricks that they use to make whoever they want to win, where like, and you don't pick up on it prior to doing it, but if you watch like an American Idol, I can, before they even perform, just hearing what the judges say, I can tell you who's going home the next day and who's not, because they do, there's like tells, like for example, if a person performs and then afterwards the judge goes, you see, that's the problem with this competition. There's a lot of really great people like you, but somebody has to go home. And that person's fucked.
Fucked.
They're
yeah.
done. Whereas the next person, it's like, see, this is what I'm talking about. There's so many great people on the show. America, vote for Steve. And then the person who just went before is like, what could, and you can always tell by the order, the way the order is.
Well, how soon before showtime do you find the order? Do you know the order?
Call time's always obnoxiously early. Call time's at like 9 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
They stick you in a tent, and you're in this tent with like a wall air conditioner. You're in the tent with like whoever your fleet is or flight is that day, 12, 13 different artists. And that's either 12 or 13 different people or 12 separate groups, whereas like one group had 48 members. It's like, are you serious? And it's like, stop eating all the sandwiches. And you're like laying on a floor, and it's just like it's hot out. And then all of a sudden, you're by the time, then they have a run through at 1, full makeup, and you have an hour off from 2 to 3, and then they load you into the dressing room, and the show starts shooting at 5. So you know your order technically at 1, but they change it sometimes.
Really?
So it's not really mind-fucky as much as it's like, they're really smart. I mean, it's like they know whoever's going to be, like they're always going to put the little kid or the big, huge, like America story last. They're always going to put the person who may or may not do well first. They're going to throw the other okay people in the middle.
So do they give you the run through like the order before you do the run through or after you do the run through?
No, they don't tell you anything. They call you like you're sitting this like you can see it. It's laying out because I think Idol shot at CBS too. I think that's where everybody's it's shot until they get to the later rounds. But it's just so heavy, you know. It's just like you don't really know anything. But I mean, looking back on it, it's like one of those experiences. And I've had a ton of people call me and ask me, hey, I'm going to do it. What do you, any advice? Hang on. You know, you have no idea what it's going to take for you to get. I mean, there was no plan.
Yeah, because you didn't get called in for that or anything. That you just
yeah,
kind of.
I got called in. They asked me to perform. I walked in. My audition was, I said, and I was getting ready to go on tour with Dane Cook like the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not give a fuck. I was like, I have a record deal with Oleo, which is a record deal. I'm going on tour. I'm about to do arenas. Tour bus and private planes. What do I win? $10,000? See ya. You know, so I literally didn't care. So I said, I walked in, I remember vividly, I walked in, there's a whole room full of people. I strummed my guitar one time. I said, I do really short songs and kind of like one-linery jokes and stuff. Like, how old do you think Santa was before his parents told him, you're not real? And I'm like, I do stuff like that. I got a plane to catch. I got to go. I was a dick, and not on purpose, but I just didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I left, and I didn't hear anything for 3 months, and then it's just like, you're in. So I get there, and I performed on the first night, and then all of a sudden they're like, Pierce Morgan hates you. What do you think? And I'm like, Pierce Morgan can suck it. And I had no idea they're filming it. And the very first thing they show of me is me saying, Pierce Morgan can suck it. And then
yeah, because you and Pierce had like this kind of animosity toward it. Did he ever talk to you off camera and say anything?
No, but the thing about it is like it was so written in. You know,
they needed like a foil for him, kind of thing.
Yeah, and I didn't. I mean, looking back on it, I think I probably could have stayed one more week had I played it a little bit differently. But you know, I mean,
I think you did just fine.
Yeah, it was fun. Thank you. I'm just like, I'm not a 10-year-old kid who needs to have, that's my chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not a, like, whatever. It's like, my thing is, and you're, like, you're a comic. I'm a huge fan of yours. You're funny as hell. It's not easy for everybody.
Right.
It's just some people wake up, just the way it is, Justin Bieber or whoever. You're like, he's like, oh, it was really hard for Justin. When he was 13? Was that in middle school? Was it really hard for him in middle school because his mom had to drive him somewhere? And then there are people who are like Billy Vera and the Beaters, who make it when they're like 48 with the whole what would you think thing.
Right.
The point of the matter is, I'm not stopping. You're not stopping.
No, I know I'm trying to think, my one of my first big things I did, I thought this is going to, like, Last Comic.
Mm-hmm.
I thought like, oh, this is it. This is what's, you know, and I got to the top 40, but didn't get past it. And for a while, I was, like, so disappointed. Like, I just missed my shot, and I'm never going to hit this again, and da-da-da. And then, yeah, then you just kind of realize that it's not a race,
mm-mm,
and it's never over, you know?
No.
There are always going to be opportunities if you're open to them, and you recognize them when they come. And then sometimes they're going to be years when you're just paying your dues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a long time between them.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, so, like, were there, like, kids on the show who didn't get past whatever and just breaking down, thinking their life was over and just didn't get it?
Sure. I mean, that's anything, though, but that's, like, the delusional parents who are just, like, it's basically, like, a more talented version, more clothed version of toddlers and tiaras. It's, like, you look at a little kid, like, you know, your little kid is a way, it's basically a lottery ticket in that sort of scenario, who was born with this incredible ability to sing.
Right.
And it's way easier for to imagine this kid doing well against 30 people than winning the lottery. But it's basically the
same. This is what it pretty much is, yeah.
It's the same thing. And, I mean, I look back from the show, and as far as everybody I know Melissa had a very financially rewarding year following the show, and she got a lot of work. I haven't heard from the guy who won. I don't know. I haven't heard from any guy who's...
I stopped watching after you were kicked off, I'll be honest.
Well,
I don't say that since you departed.
I mean, I don't have any connection to it. I don't care. I mean, everybody on the show is really nice, but I don't know what the dude did. You know, he was a great singer, but I mean, like, let's be honest. It's like, here's America. America sees a black dreaded dude who works at a car wash, who lives with his wife and his grandmother, or his wife and his mom. He's from West Virginia, and he's blessed with this incredible crooning ability to sing like Frank Sinatra. Okay, so just a picture, if you will, Milli Vanilli.
That's my favorite flavor. Baskin Robbins. Just problem is you have to return it when you're done.
I can't believe I Milli Vanilli'd. just picture it like aesthetically, or like that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
And internally, it's just incredibly. He was a really nice guy, and he was a really good dude. But it's like America's going to go, let's see, who do I want to win? Cynical, snarky guy, 11-year-old girl who every year there's an 11-year-old girl can sing, or poor guy from West Virginia where the whole state's rooting for him.
It's rigged is what you're saying.
I'm not saying it's rigged. It's just they walk you to it.
Yeah.
You know?
I know. That seems to be the MO of a lot of reality competitions out there, is that they... Like you said, you can pretty much predict who they're trying. excuse me, they're trying to push to win.
Yeah, and it's like,
which makes it not reality at all.
Well, no, and I mean it's very like when you walk off. I mean, you remember like the bites that we had to do on four. We didn't go further. Did you go further? You went further, didn't you?
No, we
both got bounced.
We both got bounced.
But now it's just like you have all these segment producers, and it's just like, so you just got off stage. How do you feel? I don't know. It was all right. You know. I just played in front of 15 million people, beats the hell out of open mic at wherever. Cool. Can you say that again, but a little bit more enthusiasm? Can you begin with, I just got off stage. Yeah, I just got off stage. This is going to change my life. And that was like one of those things. I started coming to all these amazing sort of like insightful conclusions, which was, if you're tired enough and you're brainwashed enough, you can say things and believe them. Like if you're there, like I remember Vegas week, they kept me there for 5 days. 5 days they kept me there. And they didn't tell me if I was going through or not. And it's like if you're there and you're there for 5 days and you're tired and you're surrounded, squished in a room like literally cattle room, you smell because you haven't showered because you don't have time to. You have to ask permission to go to the bathroom and get food. Like, and you're in these situations that are not by any stretch of the imagination, like poverty, but very inconveniencing situations. Mm-hmm. It's like not any, and you're just uncomfortable and you're sleeping on the floor. And then eventually you're tired and you want to sleep, but you can't sleep because they keep moving you around. And someone says to you, this could change your life. And you're so fucking tired. You're like, yeah, this could change my life. I could go to my hotel room and sleep instead of sitting here in this fucking room for 9 more hours while you make me eat a sandwich that I don't like. So you get so tired that you actually believe this is your only shot. You know what I mean? That's my point. It's like you don't.
It's almost how you think people would like brainwash people in cults. Like, you need us, don't you?
But you find yourself believing it. You find yourself going, yeah. And then you don't really feel dirty after saying it. But at the same time, there was times when I was up on stage and like, you deserve a career, motherfucker. I've been doing this since 88. You know, you don't say that. But it's like, you have a career now.
Now, why wouldn't you say that? Is it just because the pressure and everything? You're like, I don't want to fuck it up, or it's just it doesn't come to you that time, or?
There wasn't a lot I looked back that I would have done different. It's just that, just the pressure. There wasn't really pressure. You're just so tired. That's the main thing. It's like you're so tired through this entire experience.
So they literally kept you in like a big room. They like for hours doing nothing.
Hours, like, and I'm talking about like a tent and like.
Well, like, but you're saying during Vegas week, did they keep you in like a holding kind of conference room?
Yeah, with like big glass windows so people could come look at you. So you're like caged like an animal.
Oh, Jesus.
Now keep in mind, again, everybody worked on the show, super nice. Everybody who was a part of the program, super friendly. I'm still friendly with many of them. I like the whole experience. I would just never do it again. You know, because they're like, are you going to do it again? No. But I'm not bitter. I just don't want to do it again. I like to sleep. You know?
Understandable. I can imagine that, like, maybe the first couple of days, like, the adrenaline's pumping and it just feels amazing. That
it does. Well, I think, and maybe you can relate to this, not you personally, not that I'm sending a message with this sentence, but, like, being on a reality show, I've come to the realization is Monday, you work at 7-Eleven. Tuesday, you host the Academy Awards. Wednesday, you work at 7-Eleven. And it's that quick and no adjustment. And I mean, it took me I think a lesser prepared person, I could see him shooting up a school or killing people like all those people did. You know how they had all those reality people who got off the shows and snapped? I think there was 3 or 4 of them.
Yeah. Didn't even hear about that.
Yeah, it was all over AOL once.
AOL.
I don't know.
What does Friendster say about it?
Friendster was really upset.
Were they buzzing about it?
They were totally talking about it. It was favorited 3 times on Yahoo.
No.
3 times.
My God. I got to check my MySpace account, make sure.
It's on there. It's on there.
Is anybody on MySpace anymore?
Probably. I mean, I'm sure they're still profitable. Companies, bands.
MySpace feels like that neighborhood you used to live in. Then you move to like Facebook, and then you drive back. But oh yeah, I had a house at MySpace, didn't I?
Yeah.
Sorry, getting off topic.
No worries.
Are you allowed to talk about some of the stuff that you're doing since?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then. So since America's, this is what's great about Chris here, that you know, I think this is just shows that proves a very valid point, which is if you're talented, you bless you.
Bless you.
If you're talented, you attract talented people who recognize it. And because of America's Got Talent, some amazing things are happening for you right now.
True.
Some of which are?
So I'm working with Howie Mandel and his company. I think it's called A-L-E-V-Y, or L-E-V is his production company for Universal and NBC.
Okay.
I don't know how it's pronounced. I would imagine it's a mixture of his children's names or something like that.
Alibi?
Alibi. Oh, that's how it would probably be pronounced.
Alibi.
Alibi. And his wife is my agent, Terry Mandel, and Jan Rosenthal, because of that, they're representing me. I pitched them 2 shows, and they liked both of them, so we just signed the papers.
That's so fucking cool.
Like 2 days ago, and then I pitched them a scripted show, and they're looking for a showrunner for me, so then they're going to pitch that around.
It's so fucking cool, man.
I know.
I just kicked him. That's how excited I am.
I know. I'm bleeding. That's how recognized of the excitement I am.
God, I must have fucked up with the like bottom feet because I don't
choose it. I'm a bruiser. It's internal bleeding. I can feel it.
Anemia.
Well,
if you can explain, like, because I love Howie Mandel. I saw him at the Improv one. I think when you were there and I told you Howie Mandel was just here, and that's when I found out, yes, I'm going with him. Like, when I was growing up, and I wanted to do comedy literally since I was about 8 years old. And my 3 influences when I was a kid were Robin Williams, Steve Martin, and Howie Mandel.
Okay.
Like, Howie Mandel, I would watch Hooray for Hollywood. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times I watched that special. I used to see all of his Young Comedian specials. And so the fact that he's a judge on the show is so cool,
mm-hmm.
especially for comics. But the incredible story that, like, now you're working with him. Just as a fan of Hype, could you tell me like exactly how he approached you, how this all kind of started?
I ran into his son, Alex, first off, one of the producers said, Howie and his team are huge fans of yours. And I'm like, cool, let me talk to him. And they're like, okay, well, there's a specific amount of time they have to wait until they can
after the show.
Yeah, so I ran into his kid, Alex, at a club. And Alex is like, do you have representation? And I said, no. And he goes, oh. He's like, my father loves you. And I go, oh, cool. Who's your father? And he told me, and I'm like, oh, wow, really? And so I kept hearing from different people how he loves you, how he loves you, that worded exactly that way. And then I'm like, yeah, I don't have any representation. I go, but I guess I'm not allowed to talk to anyone until, like, Wednesday. And then, like, 8:30 or 9 o'clock in the morning, the day after, or the day I'm allowed to talk to people, the phone rings, and it's a private call. And I just assumed it was Dane because he always calls from the private thingy. I'm like, hello. And she's like, hey, she's like, how are you? She's like, this is Terry. She's like, my husband is a huge fan of yours, and I heard you're looking for representation. I'm like, yeah, who's your husband? You know, and she told me, and I was like, oh, yeah, cool. And so then,
did you really play it that cool, or were you kind of like,
I really
holy
didn't.
Holy shit.
No, I was pretty cool about it. I mean, I guess it was that cool. I mean, I was kind of tired, but it was, which seems to be a running theme. I don't care about television. I need to sleep. So she came to Comedy Magic. How are we doing on time? We doing good?
Yeah, we're doing great.
She came to Comedy Magic with Jan and I performed. They enjoyed it. We kind of shook hands there. And then she said, do you have any show ideas? Because Howie has a production company. And I'm like, yeah, I have a bunch of show ideas. So then we literally, like, 2 weeks later, I was sitting in this meeting with, like, myself, four people from NBC, Howie, agents, and I pitched these two ideas, and they were like, these are great. Let's paper them. And I'm like, that really? That's it?
That's easy.
And
God, it's so great.
And it was funny because I've always wanted to do The Tonight Show, and I've auditioned and auditioned, auditioned, and Terry calls me and said, have you done The Tonight Show? I said, no. And I'm like, they hate me. And I'm like, I don't know if they hate me, but they're always like, he's wrong for us. So she was like, I'll fix that. So she picks up the phone, calls The Tonight Show people, and then I get a call back from her, and she's like, yeah, that's really weird. She's like, they're not really big fans of yours. I don't get it. I'm going to have Howie talk to them. I go, okay. 10 minutes later, yeah, you're going to do it. So I'm like, what? So I've been on hold. So she's like, you just have to perform for them. She's like, in a week. And I go, okay. And she's like, and then they'll approve you. And I go, okay. So I perform. Howie shows up for when I perform. I do my set. Howie goes on after me.
This was where?
Comedy Magic. And then I did my set. And then she called me the next day. She's like, she was like, they loved you and Trevor Noah. Trevor Noah is going to do the 9th, and then you're going to go after him. And I go, okay, cool. So I've been on standby twice, and supposedly I'm next to do it, and it could come any day or in a year from now, because they don't book new comics normally. They book Trevor because he's from South Africa, and he's here periodically.
Mm-hmm.
So doing that, and then one thing I thought that was cool, and I won't name names, but there's a comedy festival in Canada that rhymes with Montreal.
Mm.
Okay.
The famous Schmontreal.
Yeah, Schmontreal. And it's an Amity Estival.
Yes.
Yes.
And, yes, it is.
I thought this was really cool because I've auditioned for them. Have you done Montreal?
No.
Okay. Have you auditioned for them countless times? Every time. They're like, no matter what I do, it's no call, no nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, you're really awesome. So this 20-year-old kid's going to get it from wherever because he's friends
young and hip and knows people.
Barf. And so never, ever gotten it. And then I auditioned and they're like, well, you're going to have you go up at the Belly Room and perform at the Belly Room. I'm like, to audition for the next round of Montreal. And I'm like, the Belly Room. Nothing says comedy.
Like the Belly Room.
The Belly Room. Because nothing is more, you know, warm and friendly to comics.
And definitely a good environment.
Full of people who are comics who work there who all want to get up. So I went up and I performed. I didn't have a great set. I didn't have a bad set. I wasn't stressed. I just went up and I performed.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day, she's like, excuse me, Chinese food.
Chinese food?
No, it was a racist joke. I don't know what that means.
I don't either, but...
But no, the next day...
It's a punchline.
She goes, she's like, I talked to the guy in Montreal, and he said that, you know, he wasn't crazy about your set. He's seen you before and whatever. And she's like, he doesn't really, like, understand it. And she's like, he doesn't, you know, not sure if you're right for it this year. And I'm like waiting for her to go, so sorry, it didn't work out. She goes, and I told him he was an idiot. She's like, that's the worst room for comedy ever. Howie was there. No one in that room did well. You're the only one who did well. Everybody sucks in that room. If he doesn't put you on, he's stupid. And I'm like, did you really say that? Because that'd be awesome.
That'd be so fucking cool.
And she's like, yeah, I said that. And then she called me and she's like, it's not 100%, but it's kind of 100%. Because she told this dude he was stupid. And obviously because of Canada and whatever, you know, yeah. The Howie connection.
I was
going to
say Howie's kind of big in Canada.
Yeah, he's kind of like bald Jewish Jesus in Canada. But it was funny because I was like thinking, because every other time I've heard that, everybody who's auditioned for Montreal has killed and eaten it, and mm-hmm. nothing happens no matter
what. Right.
You have the set of your life, and they're like, good set. We're going to show some people in another room in another country on videotape, you know, and then yeah. you have a set where you die, and it doesn't matter. But the fact that she stood up for me.
That is so hard to find in representation.
Yeah.
Not that I have a big experience with it, but the couple of agents I have had and the manager, I don't know if they even have, whatever. It's like my Matt, the guy who reps me, whatever. Like he would say, "Yeah, they're not into you, so I can't go with them anymore." Like, so you didn't even try to push or anything. Yeah, I didn't want to hear it. Oh. Well, that's great.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Like the thing is, I usually don't even believe in representation. You know, we do like so much of the work on our own that usually what happens is after you do the work, then somebody comes down and said, "Hey, I'll take this and take credit for it," you know? Mm-hmm. But it seems like this woman, like, really cares about you.
She's tremendous. And, you know, and he's one of the nicest people. I was really depressed. And I was in, like, I think it was right after the Montreal set. And I hadn't worked in forever. And I was talking. I said, "Howie, can I ask you a question?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I said, "How did you, like, I mean, there was a period, like, everyone talks about how there was this period of time where he didn't work for a very long time. And I guess it was, like, 14 years he didn't work. And then right before, you know, the 14 years, or right at the end of the 14 years, he got Deal or No Deal.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he got Deal or No Deal, it was, I guess they had a dream list of 12 people, and he was not on that list, and all 12 of those people passed. And then he was still saying to his wife, and this is what he and she told me, I thought it was such a great story, he hadn't worked in 14 years. He's like, "Oh, what are we going to do? I don't know if I should quit or whatever. This is frustrating." And he gets this offer for Deal or No Deal. And he's like, "I don't know. Should I do it? It's going to like ruin my career." His wife was like, "What career? You haven't worked in 14 years." So he took it. Obviously the rest is history and like the rebirth and whatever.
That's great.
But I said, how'd you keep it together? And he goes, you just hang on. You just keep doing it. It's like, you wake up, if it sucks, if it's great, you just keep doing it. I go, okay. And it was just sincere. It was the simplest form of advice.
That's great advice, too.
Just keep doing it. And it's someone has AOL. No, they don't. That's the sound of a downloading thing.
I believe that might have been my iPad getting mail. I should have turned that off. I apologize.
No worries.
No, that's fantastic. Because, I mean, seriously, if there's somebody who's the poster boy for comeback stories, especially in comedy, I think it's Howie.
Oh, yeah, no question. He told me once, not to interrupt, but just so we don't forget.
Yeah.
He said that he was so excited when Carrot Top came out because he was finally no longer the punchline. He said prior to Carrot Top, he was serious. He's like, so many people made fun of me before.
For Carrot Top.
Yeah. He's like, when Carrot Top came out, I was like, thank God. I'm like, wow, that's weird. Considering, it's funny how we view ourselves versus how people.
Yeah. Because I'm going to say, like I said before, I've always been a huge fan of Howie. I mean, he is those three that I mentioned, Robin, Steve Martin, and Howie, like, the thing they have in common is just silliness, you know, just not taking it so seriously, you know, mm-hmm. and still blending some very brilliant humor into it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, like, I thought Howie was, he was like the epitome of, like, man-child. Mm-hmm. That I think was his persona on stage, and it was such a great kind of niche, you know. Such a great avant-garde way of approaching, you know, an art like we do, that I never would have pictured anybody in our business making him a punchline, you know?
His approach is, it's like fear cloaked in fearlessness. Like, he's just like, obviously doesn't really know what he's going to do, but he just jumps in the middle of the water, just kind of is like, what? Go, bring it, what? And like watching him on stage,
is he still, because I honestly haven't seen him do stand-up in years. Is he still the same, what he, like, okay, what, or is he more just monologist?
he's more monologist, and I mean, he still has jokes and he still has silliness, and but I don't think he has that same character of the guy from before, you know, like with
like Bobby's World and Man Child kind of thing.
That, he just enjoys it. I think here's a dude who is a comedy purist, is a performing purist, who's a guy who really just wanted to do this, who's wanted to do it forever, who hit this 14-year drought or whatever, and now that he's back in it, I think he's working as much as he possibly can. I think he's doing everything he possibly can, and I think he's thrilled. He seems to be really enjoying it, and whenever I go on any of the sets or anything that he's working on, I talk to his wife way more than him, obviously, but whenever I see him, he's very friendly to me. And it's like, he's enthusiastic. He's so excited. He's like, he brought me to the set of Mobbed, and he's like, isn't this great? Isn't this awesome? Look at all these people. And it's like, he's like a little kid.
So he still appreciates. He still gets that, like, that juiced upness that we get when we see a hot crowd.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, like, you can tell, because if ever he comes to see me play, and he's come like 4 or 5 times, and he's always with his wife, he's always hanging out, you can tell, like, he gets the bug, he wants to get up, and he gets up.
Ah, I love hearing that.
Yeah, and he just loves it, and it's like, he's funny, and I don't know, he's a good dude. It's good to know that there's people like that who are bitter.
Just about to say, I'm so relieved to hear that that's how he really is. You know,
he's so friendly.
And he's backing you up too, which had, I mean, that's got to feel like, because were you like a fan of his when you were younger?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of comedy across the board. I mean, I love, there's certain people you like more than ever.
Who would you say are your top three?
I have to say, I was a huge fan of Woody Allen, because I thought he was great. Elvis Costello, strangely enough, as a comic lyricist, his lyrics were so funny and so clever and so sly. And like, there's to me, although it wasn't intended to be funny, in Angels Wanna Wear My Red Shoes, he's like, I'm so happy I could die. And she's like, okay, drop dead, and left with another guy. I'm like, hilarious. And let's see, Woody Allen was great. Hedberg, I didn't really get into till later, but what a sad genius that guy was.
Totally.
And I don't know, Chappelle, Dave Attell's really good. I didn't really have, like, comedy heroes as much as I watched people.
So when you started, because, again, your thing was the guitar, were you, like, did you more want to be a rock star than a comic?
Yeah, absolutely. But then
So when did you decide to kind of fuse the two?
When I realized I was better at comedy than music. I just realized my band was like, we were okay.
What was the name of your band?
We were called the Voodoo Hippies.
The Voodoo? That's actually a really good name.
Yeah. I guess there was like one of those names where you're like, I hate this name now.
I like that, Voodoo Hippies.
Thank you. We were just 5 kids who got to see a lot of the country in a van and got to do a lot of really cool shit. And then it was like summer of 69, Jimmy quit, Joey got married. And then I was like, I'm not done. And I didn't want to start a band again because I don't know how hip and cool I would be.
So when did you get the idea to put, like, when you guys were touring, what was your position in the band? Were you lead guitarist, singer?
Rhythm guitar player, backing vocalist.
Okay. At any point, like, during the band tour, did you start kind of being funny on stage?
Yep.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, and it started being more fun for me to play the improvisational tunes than the actual tunes. And I would just make stuff up, and we would have so much fun with that. And then, and by we, I mean myself. And then I quit because I was just like, I said, if I ever turn 30 and I'm in Northern Michigan playing cover tunes, I'm out. And next thing I know, it was my 30th birthday, and we were at Villager Pub in Charlevoix. And I look down, and I see American Girl, and I'm like, I gotta go. And then I like took a couple months off, and then I was like, I'm gonna start stand up. And then I just incorporated the two.
And do you remember your first gig, like, was the first time you did the two, was it an open mic or was it an actual performing gig?
I think it was at an open mic. It was at the Comedy Castle in Marle Oak. And, I mean, it's just you learn, because as more of a musician than a comic, your songs are longer. And then, like, that's how, like, whenever you meet someone who's like, oh, a guitar comic, this is going to suck. And you can just see it on their face. Because the majority of guitar comics or musical comics, I don't even know if you'd call them a guitar comic, most of musical comedians don't recognize that the audience wants to laugh. If you're going to have funny songs, be Weird Al, play stadiums, you know, play arenas. Weird Al's not going to go up into a comedy club and do a 12-minute set where he does three songs.
Right.
At some point, the audience wants to be laughing frequently, not to see what you make rhyme on the two and the four. So if someone's doing 2 and 3 and 4 minute songs, which a lot of guitar people do, or piano people. I've seen, like, there's a girl piano player, I don't know her name, but her songs are so long, and, you know, it doesn't work for a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I remember one of the best pieces of advice I got for Skippy Green, my character. I wrote this, like, demented love song, and I think you were there the first time I tried it on stage, and it's the build-up happened, and then the chorus, and then there was another verse, then a bridge, and a final verse, and after this, I think within the second verse, I even said, this is too long, or something like that, and I got off stage, and I was like, ah, that kind of ate it, and you said, dude, why don't you just cut it, like, after the first laugh, because that's the, you know, that... That's where the humor is in the live show. The laugh just comes there. All the other verses are just reiterating the joke you already did.
Right.
So he said, just cut it off there. And you even gave me the tag by saying, you know, because it was a love song. It's about fucking it, just fucking. And you even gave me the tag saying, just cut it there and just go, you know, that's pretty much what love is to me. And that's exactly what I've been doing since. And it just kills.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, so you're right. Just the audiences in a club seem to want that kind of shorter, punchier.
Yeah, and you can get away, not to say that doing longer songs doesn't work, but with my style, what I'm doing, I want to go, like, when I'm up on stage, I have an agenda. I want to talk to the crowd. I want to do jokes. I want to sing. I want to kind of go in the moment and do whatever. If I'm at the improv and I have 7 minutes and I do two songs and that's all I do, and I don't crush with those two songs, then I've missed out on five huge minutes of opportunity. So, I don't know.
Has that, do you now, when you write, do you just specifically think, like, in a 20-second kind of song, or do you ever, because you gave Allison, my wife, a copy of your CD, which we've listened to on a couple of road trips.
Oh, nice.
Very funny. Good. Model on the front. Cha-ching.
Ex-girlfriend, hater. Hopefully she's listening with AIDS. Sorry.
Do you mean she's listening with other people who help her?
Yes, exactly. I totally mean that.
She was an ex-girlfriend?
Ex-girlfriend.
You have the hottest...
Ex-girlfriend.
By the way...
Your ex-girlfriends are so hot.
So hot, man.
They're really...
But I was saying that we listened to your CD, and they're full-length songs, for the most part. Do you specifically, when you're thinking of songs, do you separate, these are for the stage, this is for a CD, or do you take the ones from the CD and shorten them for the stage?
A little of both. I mean, sometimes it's just fun to just play music and record stuff. But, I mean, I hear so much of the stuff that's out now, and I'm like, I don't even... I mean, there's something cool about being an aging country music artist because it's still kind of 4-4 and the Eagles and, like, catchy 4-chord progressions. But now, like, when I listen to what's popular, it's like, I hate to be our parents, you know, the 80s was badass.
Yeah.
You know, and the 90s was pretty cool, too. And then I don't know what happened after that.
Hanson happened.
Yeah.
Hanson and the Spice Girls brought in the crap revolution.
Yeah. I was listening to Bill Burr's snippet today. He made the greatest fucking observation. I clicked on it. Jen Murphy told me, another very funny comic. She's like, did you hear Bill Burr's rant on alternative comedy? And I said, no, but I would fucking love to hear, like, because... Burr, once you get a beer or two, and that guy, God bless him, he's so funny.
Let me tell you what I think about alternative comedy.
Yeah, and...
Did he just rip it apart?
Oh, it was so fucking great, and so correct. And he actually said, he said, alternative comedy today reminds me of, like, hair metal in the late 80s. He goes, because pretty soon, you know what's next, fucking Nirvana is going to come, and all of those idiots are going to disappear. Because he was talking about nerds and talking about how, like, you've done alt rooms before, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Here's my impression of an alt room, like, and you'll agree or not. Hi, everybody. Something unfunny. Dead silence. Well, that wasn't funny. Everybody laughs. That's what an alter... That's what a show at Tiger Lily is.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like... And he was talking about how all these alt comics will come in, go first, because they'll never be able to follow a real comic.
Yeah.
And then the club comics have to come in and mop up for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally... the case, you know, it's like it was just a really smart rant.
No, it's pretty on the nose, I think.
Yeah.
What do you think the Nirvana is going to be that knocks these guys out?
me.
I hope that doesn't mean you're going to kill yourself.
God, I hope it means I already have.
What?
Huh?
We're already dead. Nah. And the movie ends.
No, I think, I don't know what it is. I mean, it's gotta be circular. It's gotta be cyclical.
You think it's going to go back to just like the purest part of stand-up, just the, you know, forget the gift wrapping that it's being presented in. It's the gift inside. So it's not the alternative, hey, I'm dressed in this weird thing and I'm saying awkward things, you know, and then open the gift and it's empty because it was just rapping. Or it's going to be those guys like you and me who actually have substance behind what we're saying, and there's actual structure and thought and love behind the jokes that we're doing.
I hope it's that, you know, I really do. I can't tell you, like, I'll go to the improv and I'll see 10 comics on a show and there's 4 that I'll watch out of, like, I'll watch my friends, like, you know, you were cool, you watched my set the other day, I watch your set,
mm-hmm.
I watch other people who I appreciate, but there are other much more well-known comics than you and myself who are up there, and they're so doing so well, and I don't have an Uncle Paulie approach to, like, you know, what about me, rock, you know, like, but it's like, I'll watch these people, I'll be like, are people watching this? Do they not see what's not going on stage?
You know, it's amazing, like, how long, you said you started in 88?
I started performing in 88. Yeah.
When do you say that you started doing comedy?
12 years later, 2000.
Okay. I started, my first open mic was in 92, so this is my 20th year.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. But, like, after doing it so long, I see the tricks.
Mm-hmm.
I could, like, 9 times out of 10, I could call where a punchline's going to come, where they're going to go with the bit. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it takes, you can ask Alice, like, whenever we go to the improv, I can't sit in the showroom, unless it's somebody I know and really like, I can't sit in the showroom and watch a lot of comics. Cause,
it's hard.
Yeah, because I'm just, I'm bitter to it because I know the tricks. And yeah, I see audiences laughing. I'm like, he didn't say anything. He gave you a look. He gave you a face. Or that's the oldest punchline in the fucking book. And you're eating it up. And it's just, it makes me feel like I just want to stand up and go, what, don't you people realize what originality is?
Yeah.
But then you're a dick,
right?
You know
who I watched last night, and I've seen him. Obviously, he's having tremendous amounts of success. I don't have a problem with him. I think he's a very nice guy. He's always been very nice to me. Is Chris D'Elia,
mm-hmm.
And Chris, I will say, Chris has a gift, and
we were talking about this the other night. Actually,
yeah, he can walk on stage, and he can be like, "What's up with black dudes?" or something, whatever. I'm not saying that's what he would say.
Mm-hmm.
And the audiences, they're on board, and they are like, yeah,
you know,
what's up with black dudes? And you're like, was that wow, good for him. Because it's like,
when I was telling you this the other night, when I first saw D'Elia go up, I knew right away that he was going to, like, make it, quote,
right,
unquote. And it nothing really to do with his comedy,
mm-hmm.
You know. But he's, like I said, he's blessed with incredible charisma on stage.
Yeah, it's huge.
He's a great looking guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's got the whole package. And yeah, his comedy, it's, with all due respect to Chris, like I said, very nice guy and very funny.
Mm-hmm.
His comedy is not the most original comedy. It's basically a lot of act outs, mm-hmm. a lot of, like, black people do this and I could never get away with this, which is fine if that's your thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he does have that, like, that kind of it factor that you can't deny, you know?
He has that thing that where all comics, where people talk about it, it's like, he could go on stage and he could do, you know, again, just using the example, what's up with black dudes? And then he could do, like, a mimic or something. And I could try to do it, and I would have crickets.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, but he would do it again and again, and it would just work. And that's great. I mean, we all, who wouldn't want that charisma on stage? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think we all, like, I think it comes from what we essentially believe. Like, if Chris, when he's doing it, in his mind, he's seeing the action in his head and kind of playing it out, mm-hmm. physically. But because it's coming, it's really coming from something that either he's seen or he knows,
mm-hmm.
It comes out very clearly and stays the same way you, with, like I said, your style, and I said this at the beginning, it's just, it's so lazily clever, because you do have this I don't give a shit. Like, I mean, you did you tried a couple new bits, and after one of them got an okay response, you just said, yeah, I don't remember if specifically was that alma mater one or the it was the cancer one with Jen Murphy.
Oh yeah.
And like, you did the punch and just went what was the
joke is, I was talking to a friend of mine, and she said, "Will you check my breasts for lumps?" And I felt horrible giving her the bad news with a boner.
Right.
Right.
And when you, I'm not sure if you even know you did this. You did. You went, "I feel awful about giving her the bad news with a boner." Like, it's just kind of, you kind of had that little like giggle afterward. Like, fuck you if you didn't laugh. It's, you know, you almost had, like I said, that nonchalant laziness about your style that is just like, I don't give a fuck. And right. It's such a great thing to watch.
Thanks.
But because it, again, it comes from you in this unique perspective and style, that it's so great to watch, and it's so natural. And I think D'Elia couldn't do that.
Right.
He definitely couldn't do your style. Yeah. So I just think it's inherent within every, as a comic, as an individual. But I think it's finding that original and individual voice.
Yeah.
That really can separate you from the rest of the pack coming up.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, it's all, you know, it's all good. There's a lot of, it's a really kind of cool scene in LA right now. There's a lot of good stuff.
There's a lot of good stuff. Have you ever lived in New York?
I've been there once, or no, I've been there like 3 or 4 times, like for a period of like a week or two.
What do you think of this scene versus LA, New York?
I don't, you know, it's not really my scene. It seems very incestuous. It seems very like New York this, New York that. I could be wrong, but it seems more like aggressive and like audience attack mode, where here, it seems more, I don't know, I guess it's fine. I mean, it's not really, I don't know it well enough to comment on it, but what I did see of it there felt very audience heavy, felt very New York heavy, and, you know, kind of angry, and that's not really my thing.
That's not your thing. No, understandable. I was going to say, I like it out here.
Yeah, I do like it out here.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it feels kind of like there's something going on, or something's about to be going on, and it feels kind of cool.
Yeah, I think the vibe out here, especially in the comedy world, is it can be aggressive, but it also can be very laid back, where New York seems to only be aggressive. They're like, I don't know what it is, but maybe it's just because so many people living together. It's a concrete jungle. Mm-hmm. We're here, you got the beach, you got the sun.
Yeah.
And I think it definitely affects performing style.
Yeah, and like even like what Burr was saying, he's like, I'm pissed about this. I'm going to talk to Bobby Kelly about it. We're going to talk about it. And I'm like, I don't want to watch that because they're going to fight. You know what I mean? Not to say that I don't think both those dudes are geniuses and funny, because they are, but I'm like, it's going to be fine, you guys. It'll be cool.
Yeah, just smoke this and
yeah, let them sit in the room and be alternative.
You know, it's just talking about Burr, we were watching his HBO One Night Stand that he did a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He had one of the funniest fucking observations I'd ever heard, and I appreciate it so much as a comic, too, because he talked about how this is like when the Pope got elected around that time, and he said there was a black guy in the running for Pope.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish it's very sad that the Pope wasn't elected, only because we're gonna miss all the black comics doing black Pope jokes.
Oh, funny.
Just like, yo, the Pope's going around in a fucking pinmobile, and he did this whole beautiful rant on jokes, you know, that every Def Jam black comic would be touching on.
Oh, that's funny.
And it's just because you see him going in one way, and in a million years, I never thought he would actually expose the hypocrisy of comedy within a joke,
right?
And really have nail it on the head. Just almost took like a very inside comedy concept and presented it in such a way that it was relatable to a regular audience.
Yeah, I always think it's cool whenever you watch somebody. Like, it's kind of fun when you watch a comic discover something on stage for the first time.
Yeah.
And then you're just watching him do it, and I'm like, wow, that was cool. I saw that happen.
Yeah.
And then seeing it months later and see how it's developed.
It's been polished and everything. Oh, that's the best feeling when it happens, too. Yeah,
that is good.
Yeah. Dude, I think we are... this has been great, man.
Yeah, it was
fun.
This has
probably been the best one. This has been a lot of fun.
This is by far the best Flip Schultz podcast I've done.
Well, you actually are lucky number 7.
Number 7. Who else have you had?
Salim Muhammad was on my last one.
Salim, big Salim?
Big Salim, yeah.
So funny.
So funny, so sweet.
Okay.
Great guy.
Who else?
I did a few when I was in Sweden.
Okay.
Because I was on tour over there, so I had some Swedish comics on.
Okay.
Dave Nickerson. Do you know Dave?
I do not.
He used to live here. Very funny comic. Moves. Where is he back?
Kansas City.
He moved back to Kansas City.
Okay.
Like really great comic, great road comic. Like he could destroy a room.
Right.
He and I actually did the podcast together for the first couple episodes, but when he moved away, it's like
it's hard. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. So that's about it. So you're in limited but very good company.
Excellent. Well, but thanks for having me.
My pleasure, Chris. Anything you want to plug or anything?
If you guys have the Twitter, I'm the Chris Army.
The Chris Army at Twitter.
And I don't really think that anything else that you want to know about me, you're just going to have to find out on your own. That's my new approach to comedy.
Good. Do your homework, audience.
Yeah.
Do your homework.
I could talk about stuff that I have going on and that I have available, but you need to prove that you want it. Impress me, audience.
You're like a hot girl and goes, you can't just say I'm pretty. You got to fucking buy me shit.
Yeah, you have to buy me shit.
But I guarantee you it's worth it. Because if you don't already know J. Chris Newberg, discover the man. He was incredibly funny, incredibly sweet, incredibly talented, and all good things are happening for him, as they should.
Thank you, sir.
I'm seriously very happy for you, man, with all of your success. And
we got to do a tour once it gets up and running.
Dude,
we
get on you the road. Don't ask me twice.
I won't. I think I have.
You're right. This is the second time. So don't ask me anymore. I'm on. Don't even assume I won't. I won't say no.
I'll call your non-committal manager to see if...
Call Skip. You had a better shot getting in touch with Skippy Green than you would with my manager. Thank you again, Chris. And remember, you can always check me out at flipisfunny.com, Twitter, Flip Schultz. And, I meant to explain why I haven't done a podcast in a while. I'll just make it short. Hey, I'm doing a movie. I got a lead role in a movie.
Congrats.
Thank you. I'll tell you more about it as I'm allowed to. And also, don't forget the other movie I did, the Twilight spoof Breaking Wind, came out on DVD this past Tuesday, March 27th. You can order it on Amazon. I found the actual copy at Fry's Electronics, but Best Buy and Target might have it.
That was Craig Moss's movie.
Craig Moss, very funny guy.
I was in his first one.
Oh, The 41-Year-Old Virgin. That's right. Which, actually, I have in the DVD player. I was about to watch it before you got here.
You haven't seen it yet?
Have not seen it yet.
I'm in the opening scene.
Are you really?
And I have three songs in that movie.
Oh, no shit. Maybe we'll watch the opening scene right after this and get to see J. Chris. So there you go.
There you go.
Go buy The 41-Year-Old Virgin Who Knocked Up Sarah Marshall, felt super bad about it, and go buy Breaking Wind. And thank you guys for listening, and I will try, I promise you, try to be more frequent and regular with these podcasts. And Brandon Wolf, again, thank you for the love, my friend. And I will see you guys next time. Yay!